Live from WRAL News Headquarters in Raleigh, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
There's no doubt North Carolina is a battleground state. For the second time in just over a week, the Biden campaign will make a stop in Raleigh. But right now, the First Lady is with Governor Roy Cooper, and they're at Forsyth Technical College.
And it's still a bit damp in places with cloudy skies, but it's warm out there. I'll show you who could see a little sunshine this afternoon and when the big event comes with some rain this weekend.
And this afternoon, family and friends will say goodbye to a Johnston County teenager who was killed in a crash this week. What we know about services for the other young victims who died in that same crash.
If there was any question about how important North Carolina is in the race for the White House, take note of what you just saw there, those live pictures. And in less than 2 hours, First Lady Jill Biden will be over in Raleigh. Good afternoon to you. I'm Jeff Hogan.
And I'm Renee Chu. Thanks for joining us. It is the second visit from a member of the Biden family already in 2024. President Biden visited North Raleigh a week ago Thursday. WRAL's Kelsey Coffey joins us live from RDU with what we know about the First Lady's agenda. And Kelsey, just moments ago, we saw she's already in North Carolina, just making a stop in the Triad first before coming here.
Yes, Renee, and she's expected to be here at RDU in just a couple of hours or so. The State Highway Patrol and other security are already here waiting for her arrival, but we'll give you a look at some video now of her in Forsyth County at Forsyth Tech in Winston-Salem. She's here before she's headed here to Raleigh. Governor Roy Cooper is expected to join her there at the college. And once she gets to RDU, she'll head to a private campaign fundraising event. And that's happening in a North Raleigh neighborhood. President Biden did a campaign stop at that same location back in 2011. And First Lady Biden's plane is expected to land here at RDU at 1:45. And this fundraising event in Raleigh shouldn't last that long. The First Lady's schedule, it looks like she'll be headed to South Carolina by mid-afternoon, but we'll have a crew here and keep you updated as she arrives. Renee?
Kelsey Coffey, live at RDU. Thank you.
New at noon, a Johnston County community is preparing to say goodbye to one of the teenagers killed in a crash earlier this week. WRAL's Brian Schrader has a look at this afternoon's funeral and details about another victim's services.
Jeff, 17-year-old Freddie Saris was one of the four teenagers killed Monday morning in that high-speed crash on Interstate 95. His visitation was last night, and the funeral is at 3 o'clock this afternoon at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Clayton. We've also learned that 16-year-old Samaj Williams will be laid to rest Monday at 2:30 p.m. at the Bridge Church in Smithfield. 17-year-old Alan Lockamy and 17-year-old Christopher Jackson also were killed in that single-vehicle crash. Troopers say they tried to catch up with the car after clocking it at 104 miles per hour. Lockamy was the driver and crashed into trees near the Brogdon Road ramp on I-95. The trooper was not able to catch up with that car, so they did not initiate a pursuit.
Still tough days ahead for those families. Brian, thank you.
Our chance for rain this afternoon is slim, but our pattern turns wetter for the weekend. Elizabeth Gardner is in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with a look at when the rain will be the heaviest.
Take a look at Doppler 5000 radar. We had a little line of showers earlier this morning, so we still have some wet spots on roads around the region. We just took a look at Chapel Hill, and you can see it was still wet there. We're looking at pretty dry conditions for the remainder of the afternoon. We take a look at Futurecast, and there could be an isolated shower that pops up here or there, but we'll also have the potential for a few thin spots in the clouds. That means a little bit of sunshine might try to break through, but we're not going to clear the skies by any means. We get through 9 o'clock tonight. As a matter of fact, as warm as it is, it might be pleasant to spend some time outside this afternoon or maybe even find a place to have dinner outside. We should be that dry. We do have a 20% chance of showers in our forecast, so one or two could pop up here and there. Everything changes tomorrow, though. We're going to see a front moving through. It's going to bring us some rain, potentially some light rain in the morning and then some heavier rain during the afternoon, overnight Saturday, and into the first half of the day on Sunday. I'm going to walk you through that coming up on Futurecast hour by hour. Take a look outside. There it is, Pinehurst. Some folks out there in shorts and t-shirts. A little bit of blue sky breaking through. Our temperature almost 70 degrees, and it is definitely breezy. A southwest wind keeping things warm out there. We're looking at temperatures climbing on up into the low 70s for this afternoon. We're going to talk more about our rainfall for the weekend and how much we could see in the rain gauges by the time it's all over. Coming up.
Sounds good. We'll see you then, Elizabeth. Durham Public School employees got some good news last night, but the future of their pay is still uncertain. The school board voted to move around the money so that classified employees would not have to pay back any funds from past paychecks. WRL's Monica Casey shows us how they did it and what's next.
The unanimous vote at last night's packed school board meeting was to ensure employees will not have to pay the district any money. That's the good news, but the amount that will be on their next paychecks is still up in the air. The board voted to move $4.5 million out of the fund balance. That pot of money is earmarked for one-time expenses like this one. This move leaves about $6 million left unassigned. The senior executive director for finance told the board it's best practice to have $8 to $10 million in that fund, so now they'll have to work on adding to it again in future budgets. The way they've allocated this money means the school board won't have to go to the county to ask for more yet. That option is not off the table for future pay. The school board will meet again next Friday, February 2nd at 3 p.m., the first of what will be weekly meetings as they sort out this issue. We're speaking with school employees about what they call an emotional roller coaster. Hear from them coming up at 5. Monica Casey, WRL News in Durham.
Achieving national excellence, that's the goal Wake School Superintendent has for the state's largest school district. Hundreds of parents, staff, and students attended a presentation from Robert Taylor, who just completed his first 100 days on the job. Taylor has been listening, learning, and connecting with students, staff, and parents. He spoke before hundreds of people, highlighting what works well in the school district and what he calls next-level opportunities.
I think the biggest need is making sure that we have an equitable distribution of resources. That's absolutely what I've heard from parents, from teachers, people across the district.
In his community report, Taylor says the district does an excellent job focusing on the needs of students, and he notes how the community values strong public schools. Parents WRL spoke with say they want to see more pay for staff as well as seeing safe, inclusive learning environments.
Museums across the country are taking steps to comply with new federal rules regarding Native American artifacts. Last month, the government announced that museums must obtain prior informed consent from tribal leaders before displaying ancestral heritage items. Universities, art institutions, and other venues must make updates within the next 5 years. A Russian court has extended the detention for a U.S. journalist. Evan Gershkovich is being held on espionage charges. Today, the court extended his detention by 2 months. Gershkovich was arrested during a reporting trip at the end of March last year. If convicted, he could spend up to 20 years in prison.
The UN's top court ordered Israel to take all measures to prevent genocide in Gaza. However, the court did not call for Israel to suspend its military campaign. NBC's Matt Bradley explains the irony behind this case.
Well, all eyes were on The Hague in the Netherlands today when we heard a momentous and historic decision from the International Court of Justice regarding South Africa's claims that Israel had been committing genocide in the Gaza Strip, where over the past nearly 4 months, more than 26,000 Palestinians have been killed ever since that Hamas terror attack on October 7th killed about 1,200 Israelis and resulted in the kidnapping of hundreds more. And this was a momentous and historic decision, but it didn't necessarily go the way any of the parties wanted. What we heard from the court was that Israel needs to ensure that it doesn't commit genocide, punish those who incite genocide, and the court had heard some of the more inflammatory comments from high-level Israeli officials calling for what South Africa claimed, the eradication of the Palestinian people. The Israelis denied that. That Israel needs to provide humanitarian assistance to the Gaza Strip, prevent destruction of evidence of genocide, and it needs to submit a report to the court within 1 month explaining how it has been trying to implement those decisions. Now, this was not binding. The ICJ has no teeth to implement these decisions, but still, this is a very important moment because we saw, the whole world saw, the dramatic irony of an international court considering a genocide case against the Jewish state based on a genocide convention based on the persecution of Jews during World War II, that convention from 1948. So that's why this is such an important big step for those who are asking for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Matt Bradley, NBC News, Tel Aviv.
And happening right now in the WREL Live Center, 6 years ago, three Muslim college students were gunned down in their Chapel Hill home. And today we are learning there will be a documentary about the killings. This is a preview of that documentary that they released. It's called 36 Seconds, Portraits of a Hate Crime. It's the new documentary about the killings of Razan Abu Salha, Yusor Abu Salha, and Daya Baccarat in Chapel Hill. They were killed by Craig Stevens Hicks. Hicks pleaded guilty to three counts of murder back in June of 2019. He is serving three life sentences in prison. As far as the documentary, the Durham DA's office prosecuted the case. They will be a part of the panel discussion following the Durham screening. So there are three screenings. Durham, Monday, February 12th at 7 p.m. at the Carolina Theater. Carrie's will be February 13th at 6:30 at the Carey Theater. And then there will be a third and final screening in Raleigh at the Witherspoon Student Center, February 19th at 6 p.m.
Thanks, Michelle. Stocks are headed for a winning week. As you see, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly 100 points. S&P 500 is up marginally, clinging to a 7-point rise. NASDAQ is up 20 points.
Next at noon, the suspect in the Idaho stabbing deaths of four college students is back in court today. Coming up, what his attorneys are asking for today and who else plans to attend that hearing.
Also, we're exactly 6 months out from the Summer Olympic Games, how they're getting ready for the global event in the City of Lights.
And later, the Justice Department is sending out new guides to schools across the country to reduce gun violence among teens and children.
Keep watching WREL News over the air, Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.
Classes at Wake Christian Academy are canceled for a second day in a row. School leaders say they want to make sure students are safe after a threat that came in Wednesday night. WREL's Brett Neese explains the Raleigh School plans to hold a meeting on Monday to give students a chance to talk about the unnerving situation.
When students get back here to Wake Christian Academy on Monday, the school plans to hold meetings by grade level so that students can ask their principals and teachers questions about what happened and fully understand this situation. So let's go back to Wednesday. That's when that threat was made by a high school student who is no longer enrolled in the school. The Wake County Sheriff's Office got involved in the investigation, which lasted late Wednesday night and into the early morning hours on Thursday. That's why classes were canceled on Thursday. But the head of school said because of that disruption, they went ahead and canceled classes today as well. And they canceled all after-school activities until next week. So on Monday, things will be back to normal and they will hold those meetings. And the school is also encouraging parents to have conversations with their kids at home about what happened as well. In Wake County, Brett Neese, WREL News.
The man charged in the University of Idaho killings will soon be in court this afternoon. And the parents of one of the victims plan to attend as well. Brian Koberger has pleaded not guilty in the stabbing deaths of four students in an off-campus home in 2022. Today's hearing is about Koberger's attempts to have the indictments dismissed. The parents of Kaylee Goncalves say that they are hoping the trial date will be set quickly. They support the prosecutor's recommendations of a summer trial. Today marks 4 years since NBA legend Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter crash. He was only 41 years old. The helicopter crash in California also killed Bryant's 13-year-old daughter and seven other people. Bryant was an 18-time All-Star who won five NBA championships with the Lakers. There are more than 600 murals around the world featuring Bryant, including 26 in Los Angeles. Next month, the Lakers will unveil a Bryant statue outside their home arena.
In the wake of one of the deadliest wildfires in American history last summer, big names made big pledges to help the people on the island of Maui recover. A $100 million pledge by one donor is now under scrutiny. Amazon CEO and multi-billionaire Jeff Bezos and his fiancée Lauren Sanchez pledged a whopping $100 million for recovery efforts. The couple donated $15.5 million to the Bezos Maui Fund, which provided money to at least four local organizations. But many are questioning how that money is being used.
One side of that is you get publicity. I think the flip side, again, is accountability. This is the sense that the public is entitled to some sense of where the money is going.
What hurts us is when you hear about $100 million. Why are you guys looking at raising taxes for Lahaina? Why do you need more money? You had $100 million. How come you guys are still living in congregate shelters?
Bezos and Sanchez promised multiple donations as the ongoing needs reveal themselves.
We're just 6 months away from the kickoff of the 2024 Olympic Games. Paris is hosting the event for the first time in 100 years. NBC's Keir Simmons is in Paris, where the opening ceremony is planned to take place along the River Seine.
Hey there, look at Paris getting ready for the Summer Olympics. It feels like summer already. The countdown clock across the Seine behind me there says 182 days to go. Some of the questions with 6 months to go, are they really going to have swimming competitions in the Seine? One thing I can tell you for certain, they are having the opening ceremony on the Seine. That is going to be spectacular. The first time an opening ceremony has been held outside of a stadium, and they're going to be using so many venues across Paris. The Place de la Concorde, for example, underneath the Eiffel Tower itself, there'll be the beach volleyball. We had a chance to go and look at one venue that has been built from scratch. That's the Athletes Village. We got to go inside an apartment. It looks like it's ready. They say it's going to be ready in 6 weeks' time with 6 months to go. To answer that question, by the way, are they really going to have swimming competitions in the Seine? The mayor of Paris says that in July she will jump in the water to prove that it's safe. Keir Simmons, NBC News, Paris.
They are all in. The Summer Games run July 26th through August 11th, and WRAL is your source for all Olympic coverage.
And in that video of Paris, it looked like mostly cloudy skies, kind of matched what we're seeing here in Raleigh and all across the Triangle, hoping for a little sunshine, and we saw some peaks of it this morning. Elizabeth Gardner in the WRAL Severe Weather Center with also our weekend forecast.
Weekend forecast looking pretty wet. We're going to walk through that hour by hour for you coming up in just a little while. Right here in Apex, we have a lot of cloud cover, but earlier this morning, St. Louis Street here was wet, and it's drying out nicely. I don't anticipate much rain for this afternoon. There could be an isolated shower here or there, but we are beginning to see a few holes in the clouds in some places, not in Apex, but in some spots. Dual Doppler 5000 radar showing dry conditions right now. Here's a look at satellite and radar. You can see that band of rain from earlier this morning has moved out. We still have this cold front that's back to the west. So as it crosses the area this afternoon, again, it could spark maybe a quick shower or two, but it wouldn't be much rain, really nothing to measure up in the rain gauges. What's going to happen is this front will sink southward towards South Carolina and then lift northward during the day tomorrow. A wave will develop along it, and that's what's going to help to bring us the rain for Saturday and Sunday. And it will be a good chunk of the weekend. The models are starting to show some of the rain a little bit earlier in the day on Saturday and then still moving out hopefully around lunchtime on Sunday. We take a look at Futurecast for the rest of the day today, and you can see a lot of cloud cover but very little green that pops up, some holes in the clouds here and there, but again we're looking at what should be a fairly dry evening, a little bit breezy, but with temperatures in the low 70s, I mean, I would be tempted to be, you know, out maybe having dinner outside this evening. Just a 20% chance at this point for the rest of the day today and overnight tonight. Then early tomorrow, there could be some light rain. In the afternoon, it'll pick up in intensity. It'll be heavy at times overnight and last through about the first half of the day on Sunday. Let's take a look at where we're seeing a few more holes in the clouds. You can see some shadows there in downtown Fayetteville. So a little bit of sunshine trying to break through there. Temperature is 69 currently at RDU and our dew point's at 64. So it really does feel like April or May out there right now. This is a look at the satellite view, and you can see a lot of cloud cover in the triangle off to the northeast, but southeast, stay around Goldsboro, down toward Fayetteville, across parts of the Sandhills. We're seeing a few holes in the clouds right now, and we'll see variably cloudy conditions all the way through the remainder of the day. It's 72 in South Hill, now 74 in Rocky Mount, 72 in Goldsboro, 75 Clinton, 73 in Fayetteville. It's a little bit cooler in the triangle because we're seeing more cloud cover, but where the clouds are starting to break up a bit, those temperatures are really climbing. So 73 for Raleigh, 72 Durham, 75 in Fayetteville. We're still not likely to get up to record highs, but these temperatures are very much above normal. Over the weekend, with a better chance for rain and clouds, we're going to hold the temperatures down slightly. And then as we get into next week, we'll be much closer to normal. So it's going to feel a lot more like January. 52 is our normal high. We're looking at temperatures in the mid-70s in most places this afternoon, but mid-60s Saturday and Sunday. Monday and Tuesday, we're back into the mid-50s. So we're going to stair-step down those temperatures. Again, it looks like a relatively wet weekend. It looks like some significant rainfall. I'll show you how much rain we could see Saturday and Sunday and who has the best chance of seeing some minor flooding coming up.
Elizabeth, thanks.
And happening right now in the WREL Live Center, following some breaking news out of Wilmington, a suspect is in custody after an officer-involved shooting. I want to show you some video of the scene. The shooting happened quite close to the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. They say police responded to reports of a man standing in a median intersection of South College Road and Randall Parkway. When police got there, the suspect fled toward a BP gas station and pulled out a gun. That's when they exchanged shots and officers returned fire. Nobody was hurt. The suspect was taken into custody, and the school did send out a message saying that there is no immediate threat to campus.
Michelle, thanks. Coming up on WRL News at 5 p.m., a local restaurant was only washing its chip baskets once a week instead of every time they were used. Five on Your Side's Killy Arthur has this week's restaurant ratings.
And tonight at 6, a Raleigh City Council retreat in Cary will start in less than an hour with a discussion about limiting public comment. We'll tell you what comes out of that meeting.
Justin Timberlake is bringing sexy back to Raleigh. Find out when the performer is bringing his new world tour to PNC Arena.
And he calls himself a full-time nerd and part-time Lego master. Later, where you can find his latest creation on display.
Welcome back. It is 12:24 as we look live at RDU International. First Lady Jill Biden will be flying in around 1:45. We have a crew out there at the airport, and we will bring that to you live when the First Lady lands. You're watching WRL News, available on Spectrum and the WRL app on your TV or streaming device. Justin Timberlake is going on tour for the first time in 5 years, and he's making a stop in Raleigh. The Forget Tomorrow World Tour kicks off on April 29th in Canada, and along the way, he will be bringing his show to PNC Arena in Raleigh on June 12th. Fan club members can purchase tickets starting Monday. Tickets go on sale to the general public Friday at 10 a.m. next Friday. And wouldn't you know it, JT is this week's musical guest on Saturday Night Live, which you can watch on WRL tomorrow right after our 11 p.m. news.
Nintendo will likely launch a new game console later this year with a bigger screen. Nintendo's Switch is 7 years old now and has sold more than 130 million units. It is approaching the end of its life cycle. The company hasn't said anything about a potential successor, but the new device is expected to hit stores for this year in time for holiday shopping season. T-Mobile may slow home internet speeds of some users during times of congestion. The company could slow the speed of your internet when there's a lot of traffic on the network. That change went into effect last week. T-Mobile says these users will be prioritized last, and it will notify them when they pass the data threshold.
This weekend will mark the official kickoff to Black History Month in our state. The celebration is happening tomorrow at the North Carolina Museum of History. From 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., there will be performances, music, art, dance, and food. Admission is free. Also happening tomorrow, the Chinese New Year Festival in Raleigh will celebrate the Year of the Dragon. It will be at Dorton Arena at the State Fairgrounds from 10 until 5. You can enjoy food, performances, activities for the whole family. I'll be there to MC, so I look forward to seeing you there. Tickets are $10 at the door. Children under 6 get them free.
Straight ahead at 12:30, a new plan to address the recent surge in gun violence, especially among teens and children. Find out what's inside some new guidance to be sent to schools across the country.
And Instagram has a new plan to protect teens online. Why critics say the measure misses the mark by a long shot.
And here you're winning NC Education lottery numbers on your screen.
Shot in 4K ultra high definition. Your number one source for local news. WRAL News. Coverage you can count on.
Closing arguments began this morning in E. Jean Carroll's civil defamation case against former President Trump.
This comes as the former president is ramping up his attacks on Nikki Haley. NBC's Peter Alexander explains how Trump is setting his sights on a general election rematch with President Biden.
For former President Trump on tap today, closing arguments and possibly a verdict as a jury weighs how much money and damages he must pay writer E. Jean Carroll for defaming her. Mr. Trump speaking out in a video posted overnight.
I don't even know who this woman is. This is another scam.
Mr. Trump, who last May was found liable for sexually abusing Carol, stood by his denial of that accusation in the courtroom on Thursday, saying he, quote, wanted to defend myself, my family, and frankly, the presidency. The judge quickly striking that statement. As he tries to nail down his party's nomination, Mr. Trump is raging about Nikki Haley's refusal to exit the race and has been lobbing personal attacks at Haley.
Wow, what a great victory. But then somebody ran up to the stage all dressed up nicely.
The former president is threatening to blacklist Haley donors, warning they, quote, will be permanently barred from the MAGA camp. An attack Haley appeared to welcome, her campaign now selling T-shirts that read barred permanently and quickly raising more than $1 million in less than 24 hours. Still, Mr. Trump is not alone in the pressure campaign to force Haley out. The Republican National Committee was eyeing a move to declare the former president the party's presumptive 2024 nominee as early as next week, according to a draft resolution obtained by NBC News. But after Mr. Trump rejected the idea, the RNC backed off, according to a source familiar with the resolution.
It's a great day in South Carolina!
Despite a double-digit deficit in her home state, according to polls, Haley will hold back-to-back rallies there this weekend, not backing down, but ramping up jabs at her former boss.
He didn't talk about the American people once. He talked about revenge.
And that was Peter Alexander reporting. In just about an hour, First Lady Jill Biden will be in Raleigh to help kick off her husband's re-election campaign. It'll be the second visit for a member of the Biden family in just a little over a week. WRL's Kelsey Coffey is live at RDU right now. And Kelsey, we understand today's event is by invitation only.
Jeff, it is, and the First Lady is expected to land here at RDU in just over an hour now. The State Highway Patrol and some other security are already here waiting for her to get here. And she landed in Forsyth County about an hour ago. She's speaking at Forsyth Tech in Winston-Salem before she heads here to Raleigh. Governor Roy Cooper joined her at the college. And once she gets to RDU, she'll head to a private campaign fundraising event. And it's happening in a North Raleigh neighborhood. President Biden did a campaign stop at this same location back in 2011. First Lady Biden's plane is expected to land at RDU at 1:45, and the fundraising event here shouldn't last that long. The First Lady is expected to head out to South Carolina by mid-afternoon, according to the White House schedule. We'll keep you updated as she arrives here. Jeff.
All right, Kelsey Coffey live for us at noon. We'll keep you posted on that. Thank you.
Happening today, we will get an update on a case to determine the fate of photo voter ID in the state's constitution. The state NAACP argues the legislature did not have the authority to add that amendment to the ballot. They say it's a case of illegal racial gerrymandering. We're waiting to hear when this trial will happen. It's been on hold since 2018. Now, the timing for this is important because of the big election this year. For now, photo voter IDs are needed before casting a ballot. In the wake of surging gun violence, the White House hopes school principals across the country can be part of the solution.
Jackie Banez takes a closer look at the new safety initiative and why educators are being asked to lend a helping hand.
When parents send their kids to school, they expect them to return safely home, not become the latest victims of a mass shooting. But with guns still the number one cause of death for kids and teens in the U.S., according to the CDC, the White House is launching a new plan to try and combat the surging violence.
The parents in your schools trust you.
Calling on principals to teach parents who own firearms the importance of properly storing their guns to help prevent their children from getting a hold of them.
You can show parents that they can be part of preventing the next shooting.
The Department of Education will be handing out firearm safety guides drafted by the Justice Department to schools across the country. The document advises gun owners to unload all their weapons before placing them in locked cabinets or safes. Ammunition should be locked away in a separate container.
70 to 90% of guns used in youth suicides, unintentional shootings among children, and school shootings perpetrated by shooters under the age of 18 are acquired from the home.
This all comes as the K-12 school shooting database reveals.
In 2023, there were at least 346 incidents of gunfire on school grounds in this country. That is the most ever recorded.
As Jackie Banya is reporting, and while no federal law requires gun owners to lock up their weapons, the White House hopes initiatives like this can help protect people at the state level.
Arby's Charitable Foundation has wiped out more than $200,000 in school lunch debt in four Atlanta school districts. The good news comes after City of Decatur schools faced criticism for its new school lunch policy. Starting February 2nd, the district planned to give a cheese sandwich and milk instead of a regular lunch to students with more than three charged lunches. Opponents of the plan argued that would have caused food shaming and bullying. Caught on camera, a huge church steeple comes crashing down in Connecticut. All captured on video. We'll tell you what will happen to the rest of the historic house of worship after the break.
And also ahead, we'll tell you why Hawaii is getting its own state gesture, how it's done and what it means.
Pornographic pictures of Taylor Swift have flooded the internet, but the images are not real. They were created by artificial intelligence. The photos showed the singer in sexually explicit positions and were removed from X. Concerns about AI-generated images and videos continue to grow ahead of the 2024 presidential election. A North Carolina man died after stealing a plane from an airport in Texas. The Texas Department of Public Safety said 23-year-old Logan James stole the plane from a flight school. He flew it more than 80 miles before crashing it in an open field near the Texas-Oklahoma border. James was from Stockdale, which...
Instagram is rolling out new measures aimed at keeping teenagers safe on social media. Stephanie Gosk reports critics say the measures don't go far enough.
For parents worried about who is messaging their teenagers on social media, Meta says it hears them, announcing changes to accounts on Facebook Messenger and Instagram for teenagers under 16 years old.
Today we're announcing a new default setting for teens around messaging that makes Instagram safer for them.
Blocking DMs from anyone who they don't follow and aren't connected to. For parent-supervised accounts, changes made to that setting or any other safety and privacy setting now has to be approved by a parent.
We believe that parents know what's best for their individual child, and we want to do what we can to empower parents to make those decisions to shape Instagram.
The announcement comes after steps taken earlier this month that limit teens' ability to see potentially harmful material and to alert them when they are spending a lot of time on the app at night. 95% of teens use social media and are on it more than 3 hours a day, which the Surgeon General says puts them at higher risk for depression and anxiety. Critics say these measures announced by Meta today don't go nearly far enough.
These changes are about as effective as a screen door on a submarine.
Tech-savvy teenagers may easily navigate around restrictions.
How difficult is it for a teenager to lie about his or her age and set up an Instagram account?
It is so simple because we've never put in age verification and age assurance requirements. By the way, a trillion-dollar company can figure that out.
Of Stephanie Gosk reporting. Now, is Meta doing anything to establish the age verification accounts? Stephanie Gosk asked that question. The company called age verification a complex industry challenge. Meta, though, says it supports a proposed law that would require app stores to get parental approval before teenagers download apps on their devices.
A new bill in Hawaii could make the shaka the official state gesture. State officials believe Hawaii could be the first to have an official state gesture if the bill passes. Advocates say the shaka has many meanings, such as fear not, go for it, and thank you. Many say the spirit of aloha is embodied in this gesture.
It's one of the symbols that truly separate us from anywhere else across the world. To the same extent where you can get Idaho potatoes, Wisconsin cheese, the shaka is Hawaii.
It's a Hawaii thing. A shaka sign should not be confused with the sign of the horn, such as the Durham Bulls gesture. You want to come back on camera? Okay, so it's made with two hands where the pinky fingers are side by side, and then you stick the thumbs out.
That's Bull City right there.
Yeah.
This, hang loose.
Fear not. Thank you. Now we need a North Carolina gesture. What might that be, I wonder?
Hmm.
No, something to get the clouds away. That would work.
Shoo, shoo.
Gardner in the WRL Severe Weather Center. Hang loose with us.
I don't know. Most of the year, it's something like this, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you know, even today, I mean, temperatures are in the 70s and it's January, right? A little bit of blue sky peeking through here in Goldsboro this afternoon. And temperatures are really warm. It's breezy, too. That southwesterly wind is helping to usher in all this warmth. And it begins to push back a little bit by tomorrow. It's still going to be a little bit cooler. The camera here in Goldsboro is susceptible to the winds usually. We're going to take a look at what the wind speeds are there coming up in just a few minutes. But look how well we're clearing out. Here's Goldsboro, and watch toward the end of the loop how we're starting to see some pretty nice clearing there. Some big puffy clouds there, but a lot of space in between them. Fayetteville, the same thing, especially south of Fayetteville. We've really cleared out nicely. And up near the Virginia line in our western counties starting to clear out too. From Raleigh north and east, we still have this band of clouds. And you might run into a little bit of drizzle in that heavy deck of clouds here for the next few hours. As long as it remains intact. It's a little bit gusty. Our winds south-southwest, gusting to 16 in South Hill and 19 in Goldsboro. Otherwise, we're looking at steady winds at about 10 to 15 miles per hour. So it's on the breezy side. Dual Doppler 5000 radar, nice and dry for us. We have our cold front that'll continue to push through. The rain from earlier this morning is mostly over, minus a patch of drizzle here or there. And we're going to see this front continuing to slide eastward. It's not likely to bring any more rain with it for the rest of the afternoon. There's 3 o'clock this afternoon. We roll it out to 5 o'clock. And again, futurecast showing a lot more cloud cover than we're seeing right now. So I think it's going to be a pretty pleasant afternoon, a little bit breezy, and, you know, just can't completely rule out a sprinkle. Let's jump ahead to 5 a.m. on Saturday. The front becomes a warm front and moves northward, increasing our chance for rain. And it looks like it's going to be pretty wet on this version of futurecast by lunchtime. So some scattered showers early in the morning with an increasing.
As we wrap things up, here's a look at a few of the headlines we're following today.
First Lady Jill Biden will be landing at RDU International this afternoon. She'll head to a private campaign fundraising event for her husband at a residential home in North Raleigh. First Lady visited Forsyth Tech in Winston-Salem this morning.
A Johnson County community is preparing to say goodbye to one of the four teenagers killed in a crash earlier this week. There's a funeral at 3 p.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Clayton for 17-year-old Freddie Saris. He and three other teens died in a high-speed single-vehicle crash on I-95 near the Brogdon Road ramp early Monday morning.
Durham Public School employees got some good news last night, but the future of their pay is still uncertain. The school board voted to move around the money so that those classified employees would not have to pay back any money from past paychecks. The board agreed to meet again 1 week from today at 3 p.m., the first of what will be weekly meetings to try to sort out this ongoing pay issue.
Nearly 50 years after the first Star Wars film hit theaters, a script from A New Hope is hitting the auction block. Harrison Ford, who starred in the movie, accidentally left the fourth draft of the script in the London apartment he rented when filming in 1976. The owners discovered it, and they've now decided to put it up for auction. It's expected to sell for up to $13,000. Bidding starts February 17th.
You stay with that Star Wars theme with the inventor behind Disney's live-action lightsaber. He's being honored by the National Inventors Hall of Fame. The only other Disney employee to earn that same recognition is Walt Disney himself. This is Lanny Smoot, though. He started working at the House of Disney 25 years ago. He has over 100 patents and says he is working on a handful of new inventions, which could lead to even more patents. He will be inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame during a ceremony in Washington, D.C., May 9th.
Everything is awesome about a new display at Dulles International Airport. A D.C. man spent months creating a replica of Dulles without using directions. The details of this, incredible. From the tower with an air traffic controller using his binoculars. He even has bags on the baggage carousel. Dulles officials took notice when he created a Facebook post about the creation, so they bought it. The Lego replica will be displayed in a case at Dulles today. Yes, it should be put in the airport so passengers and people can enjoy it.
Does it include some of the construction that's going on there? Is he going to take buses to different terminals, things like that? I don't know. Real life stuff.
Yeah.
How about a pet of the day here? 4-year-old female. Volunteers say Palmer is a wonderful, friendly, loving cat. She has diabetes, and lots of other people overlook her, thinking that they'll have to chase down her to give her insulin injections. We're told, though, she actually comes running for her shots. Palmer also has a special blood sugar monitor that lets you check her levels with a simple scan. She just needs someone who can accept her for what makes her different. For more information, you can visit spcawake.org.
And we wrap up with breaking news. Within the last couple of minutes, we learned a federal judge has ruled in a gerrymandering lawsuit.
Yeah, the judge says there's no evidence of racial gerrymandering in North Carolina's Senate maps. We'll explain what that means for the 2024 elections on our news today at 4.
NBC News Daily is next on WREL, your next local news update in 30 minutes. And you can get breaking news updates anytime with our WREL News app. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Keep watching WREL News over the Air Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.